And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
All right. Episode 2, baby.
Welcome back to CD Burners.
How are you doing, Bernie Bros?
Well, hold on. Let me fix my pants so it doesn't look like I have a fucking boner the entire time we're doing this.
Yeah.
My pants are too big, so it's like it does that
you
thing.
You get the pants tent.
Yeah, I got to do that. So people are going to be like, dude, he's fucking hard this entire time he was talking about Kellan Quinn.
Yeah, I mean, who could blame you, honestly? Yeah, Kellan's a hottie.
I know, he really is. I saw a thing on the internet the other day that was like, on this day, Kellan Quinn cut his hair. Like on this day, like a year
no,
ago.
No, really?
Yeah, like I saw that. I
Dude,
know,
he's
like
got some stands for sure.
Look, this is like where we're gonna show our ass. Like this album that we're doing, like at least I'm gonna fucking show my ass.
The album that we're talking about today is "Sleeping with Sirens." Let's cheers to this. This album came out in May of 2011 on Rise Records. It is the band's second album, and it was the first album featuring the two new guitarists, Jesse Lawson and Jack Fowler. So, May 2011, what were you doing?
Oh, I think I was good at this point. I think I was like on the like right track to being not the worst person in the world. I think I was, dude, you know what I actually think I was doing? I think I was working at like Bath and Body Works.
Really? Where?
In Newport Beach.
Okay.
In Orange County. I think I was like, it was my first like get well job, they call it. And I loved it. I like loved going there. And I don't know.
It smells great.
Dude, it was fucking awesome. It reminds me of like, I can't think about like any like Bath and Body Works cucumber melon without thinking about like fingering somebody. Because that, it just, like, reminds, like, I worked there the entire time I worked
Jesus
there.
Christ.
I was like, this smell, because it's, like, what the girls wore, like, when I was in high school.
Mm.
Like, my first, like, freshman, sophomore, junior year of high school.
All right.
Everybody smelled like cucumber melon.
Wow.
It smelled like, that reminds
and
me of
suddenly the pants tent is back.
Yeah, no, in the first 5 minutes. Okay, I'll reel it in. What were you doing?
May 2011 was, I was in college, and I think this was a point in my life when I definitely thought that, like, emo music wasn't that cool anymore. I think I was, like, kind of rebelling. It was, like, so I went to music school, and I was, like, learning a bunch of new shit. Like, I was going to classes and learning about, like, jazz music. And I think actually 2011 is probably the year that I had my Beatles phase.
This is interesting.
Everybody has a Beatles phase.
It's so crazy that everybody's like...
It's kind of unfortunate when it happens to people in bands like Saves the Day and Panic at the Disco.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't like go back. You can't like go back through music and be like, oh, these aren't the best albums. You know what I mean? And you're like, I want to do that. I want to do that.
Yeah, they're so good. And of course, everybody like wants to do that. And they're so influential and they like defined pop music. Of course, the Beatles are amazing. But yeah, I think I was having my Beatles phase in 2011.
That's so sick. That's such a sick phase. I didn't know you had one. I didn't know
I did,
that.
Yeah, I took a class that was called The Songwriting of John Lennon. And I had never listened to the Beatles. Like, my parents just didn't listen to the Beatles. I think they were too young for the Beatles. And yeah, they never listened to it growing up. So like, for me, it was, my mind was just blown.
Dude, you turned into, you're John Lennon. You're John Lennon. That's
yeah.
Who you are.
Yeah, totally.
Damn, I had no idea. I think there was times where I really tried to be like, oh, this is all I'm listening to. Like, I've done that a couple artists, like Elvis. The Beatles, like, I don't think I've, honestly.
You haven't had your Beatles phase yet?
I don't know if I have. Maybe it's the right time to have a Beatles phase.
Okay. I don't know. We're kind of like in our dance music phase right now.
Dude, you can be both.
Yeah, yeah.
Why I can not? Do both. I can do both.
Do some Beatles mashups for DJ school?
That is so annoying. That just the fucking like thought of that is so fucking annoying. I might have to do it.
Yeah.
To think about somebody like mashing. Oh, that sucks. I bet it's out there.
Oh, for sure.
And that's bad. Anyway, so you're in your Beatles phase.
Yeah. I was in my Beatles phase and I don't think I listened to this record. And as I was listening to it, I was like, why didn't I listen to this? And then I looked at the year that it came out and I was like, oh, 2011. if this record had come out in like 2007 when I was in high school, 2006, I would have been obsessed. I would have been like the biggest Sleeping with Sirens fans because it checks all of the boxes for what I liked at the time.
It checks all of the boxes for like what I like now is the thing. Like, I don't think at that time it would have done that for me. So I'm actually happy that I came back and listened to it now, back rather than I did what the fuck am I saying? Back when I was in 2007, because I think that's when I was into like the softer, like emo stuff and hard, like actually I was into hardcore too.
Yeah.
This for some reason like didn't hit my radar.
Well, this album's interesting because it's a departure for Sleeping with Sirens from more like the post-hardcore sound. They try to go a little bit more poppy, and it also features their first acoustic song.
Yeah, which honestly,
yeah.
Look, there's some notes about that. I like.
Oh, we're gonna get into the acousticness of Sleeping with Sirens.
Okay, all right. I have some notes. This dude, in this album, like what we're talking about. I'm gonna have to read my notes.
Okay.
Like, I'm gonna have to go, like, song by song and, like, and talk about it. Because, look, this album is fucking sick.
This album is sick.
I think what you said also, you're like, if this came out when I was in high school, this would be my fucking favorite album. And we have somebody that works with us who I think she probably was in high school.
Yes. Shout out to Joni, the intern. She's been helping us put together all the notes for these shows and doing all the research. And she loves Sleeping with Sirens.
Like, she wrote a fucking like thesis on this
album.
Oh,
yeah. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Joni, you coming in clutch here because your boys did not listen to this record when it came out. But we appreciate your knowledge on this deep dive on CD Burners.
Yeah. Shout out, Joni.
This album was recorded in Portland, Oregon, where we're going this weekend, with producer Chris Crummett. This album was originally named Who Are You Now? And it features the band's most popular and most streamed song, If You Can't Hang.
Why did they change the name of the album?
I don't know why they changed it, but I do know that the album was named after Kellen's stepson, wanting to do a toast on New Year's Eve.
That's cute.
Yeah.
What a cute thing. Dude, he has been... It's wild because, like, we get to do this job and meet all these people. And shockingly, like, in this genre, everybody we've met, for, like, I would say, like, 99% of the people that we've met are so incredibly kind and nice and cool. Kellen is one of those people. He's like one of those like top people for me. And I don't know if it is because I didn't have the like fear of meeting him, because like we said,
yeah, because you weren't like starstruck or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like when we met Mark Hoppus, I pissed my pants. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
But like with this album or with Kellen, I was just like, this is a fucking great guy.
Yeah.
Like this guy rocks. He's like, I have nothing but awesome stuff to say about Kellen. We'll talk about that more.
Well, Chris Crummett has produced a lot of other bands, Issues, Dance Gavin Dance, Knuckle Puck. He's done a lot of stuff in this sort of genre.
What would you call this?
Like screamo, kind of like post-hardcore.
Yeah, that's what I was. It's like that. It's like if those two butt fucked, like metal, like screamo and like metal core. Like if yeah. Or what you said,
post-hardcore.
Post-hardcore.
Yeah.
If those two things did it, that's like what I think this is.
It's definitely more pop and pop punk than their first album. You know, they were harder on that first album.
See,
this is like a little bit softer.
I gotta go back and listen to that one.
If You Can't Hang is certified platinum.
That's huge for a band that's in this scene, right?
Yeah,
like
massive.
That's fucking massive.
And as far as Billboard charts, it peaked at 78. It was number 21 on top rock albums and number 5 on hard rock albums. Central themes of this record are faith, relationship, relationships, hating the music industry, and hope and longing.
Check all those boxes, dude. Hating the music industry, check. Dude, I also think, so you said something interesting about the religion thing.
Mm.
Are they a religious band? Did they start as a religious band
and then
like move into not like Under Oath?
I don't know, because the song Who Are You Now is definitely like a religious sounding song. And he's questioning his religion, I think, on it. Like, I was listening to this album with my wife in the car, and she was like, are they a Christian band?
She said that?
Yeah, during that song.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, it gave that?
Yeah.
Dude, there's so much shit that this was a really, really interesting album for me to listen to, because it is the first time I listened to it in full. I knew a lot of these songs. Again, it's like one of those things that was put on albums for me, and I had no idea, like this in particular, I had no idea, like the song that, like I knew a
song.
You
knew more than you thought?
Yeah, but yeah. I didn't know it was Sleeping Sirens.
All right.
I always mess it up because, dude, there's a band in Tucson that was named Sleeping Through Sirens.
No.
Yeah, and so like I fucking always.
I wonder if they had beef.
I mean, they were a small band, dude. Like, this was
Why
like.
Why would you name your band?
I don't know, but that's. I continuously mess it up because I go back there.
Yeah, of course.
I almost thought I fucked it up. No. I was like, I can't fuck this up.
Speaking of, we talked about If You Can't Hang, currently on Spotify, 137 million plays.
Dude, let's get that bitch to 150 million. after this comes out,
yeah,
it's going to be at 150
Probably.
Million. Dude, of course. Everybody's going
to
be like, wow, they said so much about that album. They're the smartest people in the entire world.
I'm sorry. Actually, it's at 175 now.
Oh, great. Let's get it to 200.
It's climbing.
Dude, we got to get it to 200 million. Dude, I'm really actually like embarrassed to show my ass on this one. Like, really, really, really embarrassed, because I feel like this is, like, when I hear people talk about this band, that it's, like, a passionate, like you said, there are stans. I feel like Kellen had stans before that word existed.
Yeah, I think they just called him fangirls.
Yeah, yeah, it was, like, he had that thing, though,
it was
about
like
him.
Tumblr girls were obsessed with Kellen and Vic.
I know.
And All Time Low.
I know.
That's what Joni was explaining to
me. I mean, that it's weird because it was like before, it was like a weird new wave of what fandom was because the internet existed then.
Yeah.
Like that it was like you said, everybody has their Beatles. Like Beatles were like, that's like the fans screaming. This was different because it was like behind an online.
Yeah.
And then the way to like be interactive with each other like that. I think when in MySpace, when was this not
2011
when,
MySpace was,
it was like dying,
it was
out,
dying,
right?
Out. Yeah,
yeah, it was dying out, but this is like now you could share your love of somebody easily with somebody over the internet from somewhere really far away, and I
Tumblr
think that
was
like,
huge for this. What are your standout tracks, Morgan? Let's get into some tracks.
I am going to, why don't we do this? Because I have some notes. Do it now. Remember it later. I think.
That's the same song.
I know.
Yeah. You said it like two songs.
I thought that this, like, as an intro, look, I like talking about albums in full.
Yeah.
And I think that this album does a lot of the things that I like for albums in full, like good intro track. Yeah. They do the thing with the acoustic song, like right after a heavy, like it's like a perfect transition.
It flows really well.
That's
a lot
what
of
I
these
like.
Songs are mastered really well and put together, like they call it sequencing, I guess. But there's the whole album sequenced really well. And like a lot of times you don't know when one song stops and the next song starts.
That's what it's called when it like flows into each other.
I don't know.
Sequencing.
When you're sitting down and like mastering an album and you're deciding what the order is,
by
it's
the
called
way,
sequencing.
Mastering is fake. It's just turning the volume up. That's all it is.
That
so,
is definitely
like,
true.
It's literally just turning
that is
the volume
definitely
up.
True.
I still to this day.
It's just compression.
Turning it up. Like, just till this day, people will be like, oh, wait, till the master comes out. And then they show it to me, and they're like, it's just louder.
Oh, it's remastered.
It's just louder.
Okay.
Just turned it up. It's not a real thing. I was like, fucking don't get it. But, dude, also, this song, you're like, oh, that motherfucker can sing.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, shit.
Kellen's voice is so interesting.
It's wild.
We do have Kellen on the show later on. We're going to be interviewing Kellen Quinn, asking him his thoughts on the album. He played at our 9-year anniversary, or he DJed at the Emo Night 9-year anniversary, and he said some interesting things to me about this album, because I was asking him about playing this album in full and how he felt about it.
Oh, because of When We Were Young?
Yeah, and they've actually done it before. I think they did it at So What Fest already. So he's done
Shout
it before. And he's like, I mean, should I bring up this story now or should I
no,
wait?
No, fucking bring it up.
Well, I do want to ask Kellen about this when we talk to him. He said something so, so interesting to me. He was like, yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, we were in a record deal and we had to have, you know, 10 songs or whatever is on this album. And there's definitely some tracks on there that are just like, I don't know, not. They don't fit with anything. And it didn't make any sense to me because it sounds so cohesive. But he's like, there's one song on there. I think he was talking about the song Nickel Ain't My Dime. And he's like, that song is like a Michael Jackson song. Like, that's like me trying to do Michael Jackson.
Hold on. Let's see what I wrote about that song in particular. I get it. I said, I like that it's interesting because this album has a ton of different styles of genres in it. Shit all over the place in a good way. I also said it's Paramore coded here.
Because Paramore does that sort of like...
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that same beat.
Yeah, I was like, this is paracoded.
But really, he's trying to do Michael Jackson.
Yeah, which is so maybe...
So MJ right there.
So maybe Paramore got from this.
I don't know. I think Paramore probably got it from MJ as well. I don't know. Do you remember one time, I think there was an article that we were mentioned in, they were talking about like women in emo music, and they like listed like Hayley Williams, Kellen
No, what?
And
did they really?
Yeah, and like all the replies were like, Kellen's not a
dude,
woman.
Oh, look, I bet so many motherfuckers ruined their goddamn vocal cords trying to sing this in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is probably the album that you fucked your throat up the most with.
Well, me and Aaron were listening to this in the car, and she goes, oh, they have a girl singer too?
Well,
and I was like, no.
Dude, there is.
Do they have a girl?
Well, there. I don't know.
I think it's all Kellen.
Look, it might be all Kellen, but there is one song where, and it's a softer song, I think, where it does sound like it's switching off between him and somebody else.
Okay.
I don't know. It might not be.
As far as I could tell, there's no other vocalists on this album.
Hold on. Let me, because it was really, there are some things that are hard to tell. I think that having somebody unique sounding is so goddamn cool, especially in this style, doing like what he is doing, singing as high as he can over hard music at this time in place where the world was back then, I think is so fucking cool. And I think that that's why everybody did gravitate towards this, because if you do the same shit, you're going to get the same results, right? And this sounds like something different, at least to me, from this time.
So as far as I can tell here, Kellen Quinn contributed vocals. Jesse Lawson contributed vocals. Justin Hill also contributed vocals. No women singers. Kellen.
I gotta go back and fucking listen to the one where I think it's like switching off, because it really does sound like it. And I'm probably wrong. If there's no fucking... It's not. Damn, that's fucking amazing. Then maybe he just tried to sound a little bit different in a verse than he did in, like, because, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, that Day to Remember song where there's a chick in it and it's awesome?
Yeah.
You know, they switch verses off?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, that's what I was like, dude, maybe he's doing that?
He's just diverse.
Damn, really fucking cool then. Learn that today.
You know, It says that Dave Shapiro was their booking agent. It was credited on the album.
They credited Dave?
Yeah.
Dude, shout out Dave Shapiro.
He was our first agent for Emo Night.
Dave is awesome. I don't want to air him out too much, but I think a lot of people know this, but he like flies planes. He like is like has planes and flies planes. Like I don't know. They're like maybe big. Are they called puddle jumpers or are they bigger than that?
I don't know.
Are they called like Cescos or some shit like that?
I don't know.
Either way, like I've had some friends that like flew with him from here to San Diego, and that's like awesome and cool and weird hobby to have.
Yeah. Dave still works with Kellen. I think that's how we booked Kellen for the last time we had him at the 9-year anniversary. But we should maybe get a little voice memo from Dave.
Let's get a voice memo from Dave.
See if he can remember anything about this time.
And I also have to shout out Dave because I fucking hate agents.
He's a nice guy. I mean, he's a hard ass, but he's nice.
I like there are a few, and I'll name them in this podcast, but I like Dave. I like Dave a lot. I think he's a really, really cool guy. He's one of the good ones.
Definitely. What else? What else are your standout tracks here, Norm?
Well, dude, I think some of this, like, remember, like, I was saying, I listened to a lot of the, like, I listened to the album as an album.
Mm-hmm.
And not listening to this album growing up and listening to it now, I heard a lot of, like, My Chem sounding guitar. Like, there's, like, for instance, in, allow me to pull out my notes. In, okay, hit me with Who Are You Now? Like, the tone sounds, I was listening to it with, like, big headphones. Like, it was, it sounds sonically, like, the tone, I wonder if they tried to match, or, like,
probably.
Or My Chem tried to, one or the other, because it sounds like the tones are really, really specific and unique. Like, I really love that song off this album. Dude, so I think, I mean, dude.
Okay, so yesterday I had this idea where if we were going to make a mixtape for somebody, what songs from this album would you put on that mixtape and why?
I'll tell you why. All right, so, I mean, you have to put on If You Can't Hang, right? Got all of the things in it.
Good-ass song.
Dude, it's got all of the things, right? And there's some things that it has, like, that activate an audience, right? Like claps and sing-alongs. Like, it's got those things. It has everything you kind of want in a song, like, from this genre. It gets, like, when you listen to it, it's like, oh, if I was in the audience, I would be fucking pumped. Like, that's the way that I feel about this. It has to be on there.
I picked that one as well. I said it's such a fun song to sing along in the car. It would be perfect for a mix CD.
So, I do like Who Are You Now? I think that it's a beautiful song. I know, like, I never really mentioned lyrics in the reviews or whatever the fuck we're doing, like, talking about these albums, but I guarantee that there are some lyrics from that song tattooed on many people.
Mm.
Like, that's a fucking song where you're like, I'm going to tattoo the lyrics on myself. Mm-hmm. I'd be very, very interested to see, like, what the most tattooed song from Sleeping with Sirens
is. Go look on Tumblr. I'm sure you can find it.
Dude, they also, like, pulled in influences, like, at least in my opinion, there's, like, some motherfucking, like, Fall of Troy shit in here.
Oh, yeah, the like, delayed guitar.
Yeah, like, really, like, there's some of, like, some of that. I kind of understand what Kellen was saying when he was like, oh, we had to put some of these things on there. Mm-hmm. And, like, that doesn't mean that it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, I think when artists are like, fuck, we have to make a 10-song album, what are we going to put on there? And they don't particularly maybe even like the song, I think that it grows to be on that album. It grows to belong. So, like, while he said even, like, maybe the things didn't fit, it fits now. like listening to this in totality, like fits now. All of the songs fit to me. They sound like they do sound. Some of them sound way different. Like there's one song where I'm like, oh, this is like very Linkin Park chorus esque. It's like they don't have a lot of that, but it's like the first. It's like the first epic chorus. Like in Sleeping the Sirens, it's not that they don't have epic sounding choruses, but when I say epic, I mean like you'll understand when you hear that chorus compared to every other chorus in the song. And that, hold on, let's just fucking reference this shit. So it is. My favorite song on this album is Postcards and Polaroids, but that song is. Fuck, I'm gonna have to find it. I wrote it in here somewhere. Wait. Either that or Tally It Up, dude. Tally It Up was like a fucking hard one. It's like it grabs you really quick. Maybe Tally It Up.
Tally It Up. It maybe, Subtle Score.
Yeah, maybe that might be my favorite one on there because like it does the thing that I like. It grabs you right away and it's like real like get ready to like start a fight song. And that was like it's like a heavier one off the album. Like again, like you have like soft. Like My Chemi stuff, Paramore soundy stuff. I'm understanding what he said in real time.
You know what is wild about this?
What?
If you can't hang, like you listen to this album. I don't know if it's because we've heard it so many times, but to me, it's the obvious standout track. It wasn't released. It wasn't the single. It was the third single.
Dude.
That is dumb A&R. I don't know who A&R'd this, but that's a dumb choice.
Dude, you want to know?
You did a bad job.
in this instance, you're right. Like you are right.
Craig Erickson.
But
bad choice.
Dude, not shout out to Craig Erickson. Man. Take that shout out away. But here's the thing.
I wonder how he feels about that.
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to kind of disagree with you even though you're right.
Okay.
Like I do think you're right. That is the standout track of this album, but I really think like I don't know the fucking Postcards and Polaroids. I like it's my favorite chorus on the album.
That wasn't even a candidate. You know what,
dude? I always wanted that. Like they have the synth in that motherfucker.
Listen, the singles they picked.
It's a good example of liking a pre-chorus just as much as the chorus itself. It's a song you could show to your goddamn mom.
Okay, well he didn't even pick that as. One of the first
two.
Well,
obviously, dude, he was a bad A&R.
He picked Do It Now, Remember It Later, and Fire. And then finally, he was like, all right, well I guess we'll put out...
So he just literally was like, every song on this album until I get it right?
I guess, like, three singles? I don't know. Maybe they were hitting, but, like, dude, you lead with your best foot forward. I feel like this album could have done better if they had put that out first.
Dude, I, again, fully agree with you. Fully agree with you. That is, I think that if I was Craig Erickson, I would have put out something different than that, like, at the time.
Probably.
I do think that I would have chose a different thing. And that's okay. What makes our partnership so interesting is because we've got different opinions on, like, what hits and what doesn't.
Yeah, one is right, the other is wrong.
You're right. And this... I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, and I'm wrong here. I know I'm wrong here, but I think I would have gone something else at the time. But it has everything that the album, everything that you would want in a song. It does. It's yeah. Got all of those things. I just think, for me personally, there are some better choruses on this album, and I think that that's like the thing that pushes a song.
Okay, so back to the mixed CD.
Okay.
I am always a sucker for an acoustic song. If I'm making a mix for a girl, I am absolutely throwing on all my heart. It is a beautiful acoustic love song. It is the second to last song on the album. It was written by Jesse Fowler, and I think it would be perfect on a mixed CD.
Yeah, I mean, it's fucking... I like that it's the second to last.
Yes,
like
me
that's
too.
Why I that's what I'm.
When, good sequencing.
Good sequencing. I think these two albums that we reviewed, the sequencing is perfect. We're gonna start reviewing some albums where I'm like, why the fuck would you put that song there? Yeah. Like, I think, sure. that, honestly, dude, you don't want to know what the best sequencing of, like, almost any album, I think, is the live Blink-182 album.
Mm, okay.
Like, I think that it's perfect. I think it is perfect, well, perfect, perfect.
We love that. We listened to that probably 500 times before we played Coachella.
Yeah, that actually, that is really, really funny. That's the album that we listened to be like, how do we, like...
Banter.
How do we do this? How do we, like, you know, like, how do we become performers?
Yeah.
And that's the album that we listened to. And maybe that's why I think it's perfect. But, like, I just think that's the sequencing where I'm like, oh, yes, 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 keep going, keep going, keep going. But I think that this album did a really good job of doing that. It was like fast where it needed to be fast, and it was slow where it needed to be slow.
What did you think of the trophy father's trophy son?
Okay. Here's where I'm going to get some fucking shit. I'm going to get shit here.
Big Daddy Issues song.
It's a dead dad song, yeah. Right? Like, it's like a dead dad song.
Dead beat. Is he dead? I don't know. I thought it was just a dead beat.
It just gives dead dad song, right?
Okay.
It just does.
Okay.
It gives dead dad song. I don't know. We can, maybe we don't ask him.
Maybe not.
Come on. Is your dad dead?
Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, it gives dead dad song. And there are ways to do it that are really, really, really good. For instance, Neck Deep does a really good job of dead dad songs.
Okay.
Like, really, really, really good job. There are some songs that don't do that. This one does. Whatever it is, maybe he is a deadbeat dad or dead dad.
It is a deadbeat dad. It is not based on personal experience. It addresses an absentee father.
Damn, so he just wrote this like...
Kellen Quinn told the magazine Kerrang, when you have to watch someone else, especially a child, go through the same disappointments you went through, it's tough. I opened up a lot of feelings I haven't felt in the long time, and I really wanted to write about it. I really wanted to write something real.
Well, that's like, you know, it is really telling. Honestly, this song is really telling of who he is as a person, because he's a fucking great dad.
Yeah, like he's so empathetic that he can put himself in the position of like, oh my God, what would it feel like?
Dude, he's just an awesome, that it really makes sense. He like followed through is the thing. Like he wrote this and was like, I don't think he had a kid back then, but now it's like how he is with his family.
He did. He had a stepson. That's how they named the album.
Oh, fuck. Well, either way, he fucking followed through on with his kids.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. Maybe the real dad, the bio dad, was not great. And that's what Kellen was writing about.
Dude, we gotta ask him.
All right, we're gonna ask. Who is the deadbeat dad?
Who is he? And give us some tea. Spill the tea.
Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it. I don't know. We'll see. We'll ask.
I mean, I'm gonna ask. Like, I'm gonna ask all of these fucking questions. And whether or not we get an answer, we'll find out. But I think he's cool enough where he'll be like, yeah, all right, I'll tell you. What were your standout tracks?
Well, All My Heart, as we were just talking about, I went down a wormhole of Sleeping With Sirens and their acoustic songs. And this was mostly based off of Joni's thesis. She wrote an essay. She said it's a video essay script that explains her thoughts on how Sleeping With Sirens acoustic songs opened them up to a new fan base and helped them reach a new level of pop stardom, because they were basically like becoming more appealing to teen girls. They were getting away from doing all this like post-hardcore, screamy, really heavy music and turning it way down. And this was the first sort of acoustic song that they put out.
This was the first one?
Yeah. It's the first time they did anything like this. And then Kellen, on his personal YouTube channel, uploaded an acoustic cover of Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Was he playing guitar?
He's singing.
He's not playing guitar, right?
The band is playing.
Okay, because interestingly enough, when I interviewed him for K-Rock a while ago, he was like, I'm learning guitar. Like, he never knew how to play guitar.
So this YouTube video takes the fuck off. I looked at it last night. Has 80 million views. That's crazy.
Of Sleeping With Sirens covering Iris?
Yes.
Play a little bit of it.
All right, let me find it.
Because I haven't seen this, and I would love to see this.
But it blew up. And then it inspired them to record a version of it for a 2016 release. So I don't want to play a free State Farm ad on our podcast. But yeah, 11 years ago, he uploaded this to his personal YouTube channel. And I think it's got like the most views of any Sleeping with Sirens video except for the If You Can't Hang music video.
I really hope that he's learned guitar enough to play this song now.
Well, it's like piano and...
Or not, no, the All My Heart. Like, I hope he's learned guitar enough to play that song. Dude, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and like the shots are all close up.
Dude, that's
like
beautiful.
Heartthrob shots of Kellen. And this, I think, from what Joni is explaining, this launched them into like that sort of Tumblr fandom. Like, this was the video that people were watching over and over again, grabbing GIFs of Kellen's face with his hair and his beanie and his voice over these acoustic guitars. They actually went on and like put out a couple of like an acoustic EP. Roger Rabbit is one of the songs that I listened to on there that I really liked. And then they started doing acoustic meet and greets after their shows. So this was not only a way to like generate all this interest on the internet, but it was a way for the community to connect with the band in real life. And come and like, you know, you get to have this like intimate experience.
He did the motherfucking the Dashboard MTV experience, dude.
He did. And you know, it really, I didn't know this about Sleeping with Sirens, or I would have fucking made Kellen do an acoustic performance at Emo Night by now. But like you said, he's learning guitar.
He's learning guitar. Yeah, like he does it like I'm sure that next time he comes, We gotta have him do one of these, because that's fucking sick. We're learning in real time, you guys. Like, this is the cool. This is why this is cool. Because you have, sometimes we're gonna be real dumbasses about an album, and sometimes we're gonna know everything about it. And I like that. This is like very, very, very intriguing to me. I think that this is the album break we all deserve. Like, I think that that's like a really great place to put that song.
Yeah,
it's a great break.
And then they come back with a complete slapper to end it out.
Title track.
Yeah,
dude. I always wonder, like, why bands pick the song to name the album after. Like, I always am like, because it's not the single. I always wonder, like, why they're like, let's...
Well, we know why he chose
the name
of the album.
But why didn't he fucking put why didn't he, like...
I think what he probably... They were probably like, we need to finish this album. We need one more song. Let's name it Let's Cheers to This. Because he knew... I feel like he probably knew that the album was called Let's Cheers to This. I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
It also, like, it's a really good outro track. And it, like, ties up this album, puts a bow on it with, like, some, like, bitchy attitude. Like, yeah. I really like this as an outro.
Liner notes, we have not been able to locate a physical CD.
Interesting.
Of this. They're getting harder and harder to come by.
Dude, you want to know what? Can I do two side notes? Will you remind me about CDs? And then, remember when you were talking about Goo Goo Dolls earlier?
Yeah.
Remember when we were driving in Utah and I was like, dude, I have a friend that like follows like the Dead around and like
sure. All
these people. Did you say something that your friend is like...
I think it was Cheryl.
Like a Goo Goo Doll head?
Yeah.
And she was really embarrassed to be like a Goo Goo Doll head and they call themselves
something? They had a name for it.
Yeah. So we were just driving. Like, obviously, Goo Goo Dolls are humongous. But like, I think people that follow them around call themselves something and are kind of embarrassed to be that thing. She said she kept it really, really secretive. Anyway, back to CDs. Dude, they took... off, like, you can't find 28 Days Later, it's a movie, like, on any streaming services. So once they take away all of these like physical CDs, like the fact that we can't find the liner notes for this, and if they one day decide to take this album off the internet, like, it's gone. And that's scary.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought.
Truly is. I just saw the other day they took out all physical media at Best Buy. Like, they just took out the shelves.
Yeah, it's...
No DVDs. You can't go buy a fucking DVD anymore.
And now, so it's all online, right? And if one day some motherfucker is like, I'm taking all of this shit down, it is not there anymore. Yeah. And there is no way to get it. So, like, that's why I think that we should, you know what we should do? We should try and get a physical album of every one that we do, yeah, is what we should do.
I had that idea at the beginning of this, and then it was proven to be pretty hard. But we'll have to do some, like, digging on eBay. Maybe we have to go to Amoeba.
Maybe we have to go to the fucking band. Dude, I wonder, yeah, if the band's...
We could probably reach out to the labels. Like, if we reached out to Epitaph or Rise or whatever, like, they'd give us copies.
Yeah, we got to do that. Because I think that that's important. Holding it and, like, putting it in a CD player and physically having and looking at albums.
I think that needs to be part of this pod. For, yeah, sure.
100%. All ideas, right, in real time, you guys.
We're learning. We're figuring it out. Can you believe it's already been 45 minutes?
What?
Kellen Quinn is waiting for us.
Wait, are you serious?
I am dead serious.
Hold on, dude.
That is it.
No,
we gotta
no,
talk
no,
to
no,
Kellen.
No, 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 no.
He's waiting for us.
Hold on, dude. Let me see if I have anything else. Oh, I think that there's something. Dude, they did. This was like around the time when bands were like discovering that you can put 808s,
sure,
in your songs.
Yeah.
This album did it.
They, like, do it on the choruses.
Yeah, it's big. So sick. Huge.
It's awesome.
It's fucking really cool. Like, that was another thing that when I first heard bands starting to do that, just like I was saying with, like, synth,
yeah,
when they started introducing that, I was like, this is different and big and cool. And I like the fact that you can mix, like, something that normally wouldn't go in this type of music with this type of music. And now it's so common. But hearing it back then was really cool and special and unique.
It felt so cool at Warped Tour too. Like, because they would be playing and of course would just hit with that 808 and it was, oh, I could, listening to this album, I felt what it felt like to be in the crowd at Warped Tour.
They also do something on this album that is my favorite. It's what got me into hardcore, is catchy breakdowns. Like, it was, now I like all of it. I like even the shit that sounds like garbage. It sounds like garbage the entire time. But in order for me to, like, get into hardcore, I needed a stepping stone. And the stepping stone was a catchy breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And while I say that The Bled does it the best, I do believe that there are so many on here that if I was to have listened to this at the time, this would have been the thing that got me also into hardcore.
Right. I could see that for sure. That's what I meant to when I was like, if this had come out in 2007, like, this to me, it feels like they're only chasing safety by Under Oath. Like, that, it's that same genre, and it's an album that does that perfect, like, blend of pop and hard ass music.
Yeah, it's a fucking great album. I am embarrassed that I never listened to this until now. I've listened to this several times since.
Mm-hmm. It gets stuck in your head. There's a lot of earworms on here.
I really, really, really fuck with it. I really fuck with it. You know what we forgot to do?
What?
If you like this, then,
well,
you,
that's
might.
That's the last thing.
All right.
What do you got?
The Bled Past the Flask.
Okay.
I'm going to say, like, if you haven't heard that, like, those guys grew up with, like, in Tucson, The Bled Past the Flask. It's a little bit harder than this album, but it's, if you like those catchy breakdowns, I really think that go back and revisit that and, like, be in that time and place.
Yeah.
It's really special and cool to me, at least.
I did mention Under Oath, they're only chasing safety. but everybody's listened to that. That's a huge record. And but if you haven't, go listen to that. The same producer, Chris Crummett, he's still producing. He has been working with a band called the Callous Dowboys. You ever listen to them?
I keep seeing them.
I have tried to book them for Emo Night in Atlanta a couple times. They're fucking sick. You would like them a lot. They're a little bit harder than this, but I feel like it's the same vein, and obviously it's the same producer, and they're really fun and new. Broadside. We've booked them at Emo Night before.
Yeah, they're good.
I love Broadside.
Yeah, they're good.
He kind of sounds like the Main, I feel like, a little bit.
I like that band.
I think they're really good.
Here's the only thing about that. Like, it to me, it sucks, dude, because, like, the name doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
So it gets lumped in with, like,
sure,
that thing where it's just, like, the same thing, and it's not. And so, but at least for me, maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but, like, that name doesn't hit me in a way where I'm like...
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. It's like naming something, like, if I was just to be, like, I don't know, Hallway Drive.
Sure.
Or, like, something where it's... Or, like, a name of a... Like, there are some bands that, like, name of a place really, really works with their style of music, and it's a standout thing. I also get that we're running out of band names. Like, I get it. Like, I fucking get it. Like, look, trying to name a band or name anything, it's impossible. Sure. So I, you know, like, fucking give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, guys. Well, we're going to hop over to Zoom and do a quick interview with Kellen Quinn, hear all about this album. Let's cheers to this. And thank you for listening to CD Burners.
I'm so embarrassed about not knowing this one. I really hope you guys don't roast me.
This is so fun. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you're enjoying this podcast as much as we're enjoying doing it.
I really hope you guys don't think that I'm stupid for not knowing this. This is real. I'm like, I am embarrassed. Just know that. You don't have to say it. I know I'm a fucking idiot for not listening to this. Now I like it, so shut the fuck up.
You can listen to it forever, or at least until somebody takes it off streaming services.
Nobody take it off. Okay, hello, Kellen.
What is that?
Oh, okay. So I always tell everyone, because I never change it, but basically what happened was my last name's Bostwick, and it just spell corrected it to Bodywork, and I just kept it because I thought it was awesome. It sounded like I could do, like, workout training or work on cars, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah, no, it's not confusing at all, dude, to hop on Zoom and have Kyle Bodywork.
Kyle Bodywork. Oh, and Kyle's always, like, my Starbucks name, too, whenever I... Mm-hmm. get my order.
Yeah, I'm sure just they try to do some interesting stuff.
Have you gotten recognized at Starbucks, like, before?
Yeah, and they still ask me what my name is. I still say Kyle, though. Just because it's easier to spell than Kellen, and, like, especially when you're in other countries, like, you'll get your coffee back and you'll be like, wait, is this mine or is it not? Because this says something completely different than my name.
Dude, what is the weirdest place that you've ever got? Like, where you're, like, not expecting it? Like, where you're at, like, a doctor's appointment and they're like, oh, wait, are you?
Well, this is kind of a strange one. I got recognized at my vasectomy appointment.
Yeah, dude. That's what I'm talking about.
By who?
Well, so it was a girl that I went to beauty school with, actually. And she was like my nurse, which is so awkward because she was just like, as she was prepping me, she was like, oh, my sister's a big fan. And then, like, I think it was like a couple months later, I ended up seeing her at the grocery store. And it was just like one of those things where it's like,
Your balls are just in her hand. And she's like, my sister's a big fan, you know?
Dude, and there's nothing worse than doctor office dick. It's like could not be smaller ever. It's like it's legitimately like the worst place to ever get recognized.
It is what it is, dude.
All right, let's jump into it.
I just wanted to show you that I'm wearing my piece of flair.
I love it.
Let's go.
The 9-year anniversary. Amazing. Yeah.
The fucking man. It's always so nice to do this with you. This is like, you know, I was looking back at our interview questions from like years ago when we were doing shit on K-Rock, and I remember you were like walking around in the back of like everybody was in the weirdest place ever, and you were just like in the middle of nowhere. We were walking around doing like interviews, and we're like, we don't know what the fucking world is gonna be like. And yeah, it's just like, so it's always just so nice to like have you here. I don't know, did you get a little rundown of like what this is and like what we're doing?
It's about the album, right?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we did a deep dive on Let's Cheers to This.
Oh, great. You're going to know more than I do then.
Well, I doubt that, but we do have a few questions for you. Obviously, you know, you guys are playing it at When We Were Young Fest this year. How does it feel to be playing an album in full, and how is that different from like doing a normal set at a festival?
So we have done this album one time all the way through before, and it was nice to like go back and kind of revisit some, because we play like If You Can't Hang, obviously, like every night. We play like Do It Now constantly. We've played Fire a bunch of times, but like a lot of the other songs we don't play. So getting to go through and play them will be, it'll be fun. It'll be nice to be able to do it like on a tour leading up to When We Were Young, and then doing When We Were Young rather than just one off show.
This was like a, I was gonna say in the episode that we are putting out about you, like I was really showed my ass on it, because like this was like not an album that like I knew super well, so I went back and like really re-listened to it, like yep. Really like and yeah, and at this point I might know more than you about this, you know, just because I was like diving so far. But like, I mean, dude, like are there any, and this is like kind of where we wanted the podcast to like lean into, is like, are there any stories or like during the time of recording that the world doesn't know that you think are like funny or important?
Yeah, I have some good ones. You want me to share them?
Yeah, I mean, dude, give us a good one.
I think like the biggest thing for us was that like coming off of our first record, wasn't like super well received within like the scene at first. Like it was kind of, like AP gave us like a half star on our first record as far as a review. I think like for us, like this record, Let's Cheers, was the record of like, all right, well, let's just do shit our own way. And the first record was like made really quickly. We had gotten signed. We only had like 3 songs and had to like come up with like, I think the 10 that we had on that one. So Let's Cheers was written, you know, on tour. A lot of the songs were written on tour, like, Trophy Father was written on tour, If You Can't Hang was written on tour, and Do It Now and stuff. So we had songs that we had been like leaning into for a while rather than just like go make a record. And I think we kind of found our own lane that was different from like other metalcore bands at the time. I think our first record was like, hey, we want to sound like these bands that sound like this and have sounded like this. And Let's Cheers was kind of our record of, oh, well, they sound different than they did on their first record, and they sound uniquely them. So
I remember, so I mentioned to you at the 9-year anniversary that I think I maybe brought up this podcast, and I was like, how do you feel about the record? I know you guys played it at So What Festival. I feel like you mentioned something about a couple of the tracks on the record you have like a weird relationship with. I think you said like there was one song that you were like, that's just a Michael Jackson song. Can you tell me a little bit more? Song.
Oh yeah. I mean, there is. Yeah. I think that our band has always just kind of been, I think probably like our latest records feel a lot more cohesive. Maybe Madness feels pretty cohesive, but still there's just like, I think our problem as a band, and it's not necessarily a problem, but like, we can kind of like do so many different genres that it's hard to like kind of like tap into, okay, like what is the definitive Sleeping with Sirens? I'd say probably like If You Can't Hang, Do It Now, Fire, Trophy Father, like some of the, like the heavier ballad songs and the upbeat leaning somewhat pop punk, also, you know, heavy, is where we like really shine. And so, yeah, there is a song on there that's really, really pop. But I don't know, for some reason people like love those oddball songs, so I can't hate on that, you know.
Dude, you know what's really strange in the albums that we are doing, the thing that I'm finding really interesting is that all of the albums that I really really tend to enjoy, that's kind of the common theme, is that there are songs that feel like they don't belong now, like, or back then maybe, but now when you listen to an album in entirety, you couldn't imagine that album without that song in there. So like, Yeah. I don't know, like if you, let's just say that you guys, like if you could go back, if you could go back and re-record this album, like if you listen to it all the way through and you're like, I wish I could do that different, there are things on this that I would change, like, or you, do you think it's like perfect as is?
Well, I think that's the fun thing about doing this, you know, these shows at When We Were Young, is that I want to go back and kind of revisit some of the songs and see if we can like kind of make them uniquely their own live and try some different things. So I guess that's our way of being able to go back and kind of not necessarily fix things, but maybe just enhance things or make things like a little bit more us as we are now.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're like, oh fuck, I found a better tone for this song, like I found like a different way to sing this and I wish I would have done that on the album. Are there any like key parts in there that you're like, I would have done that differently?
Not really. I mean, the album was a lot of fun because it was recorded with Chris Crummett, and Chris Crummett is a very different producer than Cameron Mizell was. He was like the second person we'd ever worked with. He's a lot more analog in the sense of like, if you can't sing it, he's not going to fix it for you, you know? So it's like everything that was done on that record is very like authentic. Like even like a lot of the screaming that was done by a previous member, Jesse, in the band, like, you know, I didn't scream like I could now, or, you know, wasn't like as powerful as like Jesse's was. So he took a lot of the reins on the screaming on that record. And, you know, it just like taught me a lot about growing as an artist and how to become better in making each record.
So as we were diving into this album, some of the central themes that kept coming up were like faith, hope, longing, questioning religion. Were you and are you religious? Can you tell us a little bit about what you were going through regarding your faith at the time of writing the album?
I think a little bit. I mean, yeah, I think like I grew up in a very Christian household and, you know, I still have like faith per se. I wouldn't say that it's rooted in Christianity, but I definitely still have faith. I believe that, you know, there's something out there I have to, just because I see it in, you know, my kid and I see it in like my family. And I think that record was a lot of us just being like thrown into the world and on the road. And so I think you'd see a lot of things that you'd be like, you know, obviously would be worth questioning, just from like having that experience. So yeah, I think like, and I think that I'm always constantly like searching and questioning within decisions and life choices and faith and all that kind of stuff, even now to this day.
I mean, like I look, say, I mean, same, like, I think that it's like, I don't know everything, right? Like, I don't know how airplanes work. This is like the easiest way that I can be like, oh, there's something bigger than myself out there. Like, I don't know everything. And if I'm like, I believe that I know everything, that would be like, I am God, right? So like, I, obviously there is something bigger than myself. And I think that that's like the easiest way to explain like faith or spiritual, like something spiritual to somebody who just completely associates like faith or spirituality with religion. That's just a side note. So I think that that's
yeah,
like a really great, like, I think that that's like a really great like explanation, like, and especially what you said that you see it in your kids, like that is something that,
yeah,
I don't,
dude,
think that I don't think that that's something that like anybody who hasn't experienced that will be like can see. So like, all right, besides the songs, like, what are the things that you're most proud of about this album, whether it's like marketing, if you guys did interviews, like how you presented yourself during the time, like besides the songs, like what are you most proud of surrounding this album?
I think for me, it was definitely a shift in like the popularity of the bands, which was cool. But like all of that and the accolades and all that kind of shit aside, I think what I'm most proud of is just, and anytime I make a record, I'm just proud of the fact that we can go into a space and somehow channel these songs and this energy and record it and have people connect to it. I think that that's always the beauty in making any record. And I think that it's amazing that people connect to this one. And if this is their favorite Sirens record, then that's awesome. You know, like that makes me very, very happy and stoked. But yeah, like to be able to play a song, like If You Can't Hang Every Single Night, is going to be a pleasure. You know, it's like to have that song just stand the test of time and be like, even when I come to your guys' emo night, when I play that song, like people still go off. So it's like, it's just incredible to know that, you know, five dudes in a band rolling around in a van, making a record in a rundown studio space and living off Taco Bell came up with a song that's still popular today, you know?
Totally. Yeah, that's incredible.
I had it last night.
it's pretty good. I like Taco Bell. I haven't had it in a long time, but
if I'm not mistaken, I think this album had your guys' first acoustic song on it.
Our first one did. It had a lot of production though. Okay. The one on this record, probably a little bit more stripped down.
Got it. Okay. So through doing a little bit more research, I noticed that your cover of Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls, it's your second most popular video on YouTube.
And it's not on a record.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, yeah. You know, I think, I don't know, can you speak a little bit to how you view the importance of acoustic music to the trajectory of your band? Because that, you're not an acoustic band, but this song like has this super emotional stripped down acoustic version. Obviously, like people really connected with your cover of Goo Goo Dolls. You went on to do EPs that were much more stripped down. And that's not really like what people think of when they think of Sleeping with Sirens. But I do think it's very important to, you know, the growth of your band and kind of like the depth of what you guys do. And I think the last time you and Morgan spoke to you don't actually play acoustic guitar. You were learning acoustic guitar. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm still learning. Guitar is hard, dude.
Dude, props, it's fucking hard as shit.
Props to anybody that plays good. I thought it was going to be something I could just pick up and just rip on, dude. I just got to say, like, guitar is hard. Like, to really play it well, like, sure, you can record, like, yourself 50 times playing the same part and get the right little clip of it and post it online, which is something that I do, by the way. but to go on stage and play it, like, close to perfect or, like, I mean, my band, almost every single night, one of the guitar players will come off stage and be like, man, I fucked up a part. I'll be like, a part out of like yeah. 15 songs, dude. Like, that's incredible. Like, it's something that I think will be like a lifelong journey. And I don't know if it's ever going to be like my main squeeze, but I really enjoy it. I'm glad that it's a challenge. But yeah, getting back to your question on acoustic stuff, I think like it's kind of where I started with music. So there's like a natural, like vibe to me doing acoustic stuff. And one of my favorite things to do with our songs is to reimagine them in an acoustic way. And it just kind of like, I think it shines some emotion that maybe is lost in distorted guitars and lots of drums and lots of other things. And sometimes the song can mean something completely different in an acoustic format than it does in a heavy format. Depending on how you listen to it, the emotion's different. So I love being able to just kind of do both things, you know? I like both worlds.
You know, what's really funny is that, like what you're just saying, that you just like sort of picked up guitar. You know, we've been technically DJing for like 10 years now, and we didn't know how to do it. We are going to DJ school to learn how to do it. So are we're you? Like, yeah, dude, we go like once a week, if like every Wednesday from like 8:30 to 10:30, and like are learning how to do it. And it's technically something we have been doing. So yeah. It's like never, dude, it's never too late. And now I have like a brand new respect for all of that. I thought it was legitimately just pushing a button, and it's so fucking fun and like challenging. And it makes me like look at music in a different way. So I think totally. That's cool. I think that it's cool that you picked up guitar like now and be like, I'm going to, and now you get like you kind of get a new respect for like people who do
100%.
Like, you said, like your band. Yeah.
100%. Like if I'm like before I would jump in the studio and be like, dude, why can't you just play this thing that's in my head? And now I'm like, oh shit. Because you have to think like, it's like doing a math equation, like to like understand the fretboard and to know like what, to like follow along to the key that I'm singing in and be able to like find that on the guitar is really hard.
Dude, have you noticed like, okay, just this is a sidebar, but like, you know, it was like way easy to find guitar tabs like 10 years ago. And now it's like, you cannot find any fucking guitar tabs online.
For like specific, I mean, yeah, some songs are harder to find for sure.
Like I remember.
I still have such a hard time like reading tabs and understanding them. And then also like some of the times, like you'll get a tab and you'll like learn it from it. And then someone will be like, oh, that's not correct. So it's like, okay, sweet.
Like, dude, I just like, yeah. I haven't seen like an easy guitar tab like website. And I remember it was like
ultimateguitar.com.
Dude, it sucks. Yeah, it sucks. Sure. It sucks now. Or like it doesn't have. Yeah, dude, it's like way different. Anyway, when you, okay, this is my,
there is one more thing before we move on, because there is a good app that I found, but I do have like a qualm with it. So there's an app called Chordify, and you can put any song that is found on the internet and it'll like break it down into chords for you. Like it'll play the video and it'll break it down into chords. The only problem is it only does like open chords and bar chords. So it doesn't, like if you have a song that has like, you know, power chords or whatever, or octaves, it doesn't understand that, but it is cool to be able to like learn, okay, this is a C chord, this is a G chord, D chord. And then you can like look up, if you don't know how to play that power chord specifically, you can look up what is a, you know, G or C power chord.
Dude, what was the song that you put in there where that was like, you're like, it did it for you perfect. Do you remember?
Probably like a Royal Otis song. You know that band?
No.
No. Fuck.
They're what sick.
Hold on. Looking it up right now.
Royal Otis.
All right, I'm going to listen to this.
From Australia.
After. It sounds like an Australian band. Like yeah. That sounds like an Australian band.
And
name.
The song that I put in was Oysters in My Pocket.
Done. Let me just star that for after this. All right. Real questions about the album.
It's such a vibe. I love it. And they just put out a new full length. That's great. So,
dude. So, all right. Challenges you faced while recording this album. Like, what, in your opinion, were there any? And if there were,
yeah,
what was the biggest one to you?
Well, this is a fun story too, because you guys are wanting like behind the scenes stories. I think we've told this a little bit, but like, I don't know if it's ever been like on an interview or record. So my band like lives all over the place. We don't live in the same town. So we don't have like a rehearsal spot that we all go to. So when we were going to make this record, the guys were coming to where I live in Oregon, and we only had a small budget to make this record. So instead of finding like a recording space, I basically put them up in a storage unit, and they were living in the storage unit as well. And it was like in the middle of winter. So we set up like these plastic, like drapings, like everywhere in there, and then put kerosene lamps in. And the guys were like, and I had like a place. So the guys were sleeping and breathing kerosene for like probably 5 days. And Justin goes, bro, I have the worst headache from breathing that kerosene. And my wife found out about it. She's like, dude, they're going to die if they breathe that. So they ended up staying in my apartment, my tiny apartment, all of them, for like the rest of the sessions. But I think to this day, we consider like coming up with Fire and some of the other songs based on just being high on kerosene.
Dude, that's so crazy.
That's fucking wild that you put them in a storage unit, dude.
I didn't do it as like a punishment. It was like the only thing I could find within a budget, you know?
That's so funny. The lead singer gets a nice cozy bed, but the rest of the band, you're in a storage unit with plastic tarps and kerosene, guys.
Dude, that's probably you. Dude, it's awesome though, because that's what I'm talking about. It's like that probably, like you said, that probably inspired some of the stuff for the album that you would never know if we didn't fucking uncover this thing. And that's what I want this to be.
Well, yeah, well, for sure. I mean, like when you go to like work and rehearse a song and it's freezing ass cold in there and you have to turn the kerosene off so that you can breathe, you want to get through the song as quickly as possible. Plus all the guitar strings are probably out of tune. And like, it was gnarly, dude. And then when we were in Portland, we were staying at Chris Crummett's studio, which was like It was, you've been to Portland, right?
Yeah, we were there last week.
Okay, so like the basketball coliseum, it was like behind that. And so it was like, I think like a few days before we got there, like Chris was like, yeah, there's a homeless guy that like passed away, like froze to death on my front steps. And he had like this like cane or whatever that was like by the door, because I guess a bunch of like tweakers would like try to break in. And so he had it there for protection and stuff. So it was like kind of a hardened area that we were staying in. And I remember the label guy at the time, Craig, gave us like a jar, like a mason jar this big full of weed. And we lived off that, Taco Bell, and we drank those, what are those alcoholic energy drinks they used to have?
Four Locos?
Yeah, bro, like OG Four Locos, like this big.
Those were crazy.
It was stupid and wild at the same time. Like just... that was what we could, yeah, it was like, if we wanted to have a buzz, we were smoking this old weed or we were drinking a Four Loko because they were cheap and we were eating Taco Bell, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. Dude, it's so sick that that album is fueled by original Four Loko. Like that is like, that's something that nobody's going to be able to, like, no one's ever, there's going to be no more albums fueled by original Four Loko, dude. That is, to me, that is the most, that's the coolest thing about this album.
Well, I know that Tino from Of Mice and Men, like it was probably like 2 years later and we were on Warped Tour and he had stockpiled like OG Four Locos and he had like the last of them, like he would only have them on special occasions, and he's like, you want one? I'm like, I'm never drinking that shit again, dude. Like, no way ever.
Dude, you got some more?
That's pretty much it for me.
I only have one more, and it's just, it's like a hypothetical, right? It's like, you know, if the album came out right now and you could tour with whoever to make that tour feel like super what that album is, are there any bands that, like, well, who would you take out on tour?
I mean, I think it would have to be like a collective tour, but I definitely think it coincides with Pierce the Veil and Collide with the Sky, like on this, you know, they're gonna be on When We Were Young too, but like I think those records kind of go hand in hand. I think they came out close to the same time, and King for a Day was out around the same time that our record was out, so definitely think that in the future it would be dope to do something like that.
Dude, why don't we just put that together? Let's just fucking do that.
Yeah,
dude. Well, dude, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been really cool. And I got to tell you, it was really, really awesome to like listen to this album and like listen to it. I got like a new perspective, you know, new respect, you know, and just like a whole different like attitude, like taking a deep dive into you and the band as a whole. So it really cool for you to do this. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I appreciate you guys always. And yeah, I'll be seeing you, huh? You'll
see us.
We'll be in LA in April working on some tunes. So if you guys want to get together and you're there.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll be there.
Let's hang out.
Let's do it.
Cool.
All right, bud. Thank you, peace. Dude. Peace.